Hello, Courtney. It's time for another action-packed podcast.
Hello.
And I'm very happy about it.
Yes.
For some reason, I'm looking at our guest here, Robin Padgy, and for some reason, I'm just getting hungry. I don't know what it is. Is she making me want biscuits or minestrone? I don't know what it is.
Making me hungry. I mean, maybe your brain is thinking back to when there was this really incredible restaurant here in Austin called Padgy House. The most incredible Caesar salad ever on the planet was at that restaurant. So sad they closed several years ago, though.
Maybe she's related to them. You should ask.
Maybe she can give me the secret family recipe to that Caesar salad.
That food was good. That was a good restaurant. But it just may be a totally different Padgy altogether. Let me read you her bio. Robin Padgy brings years of experience as a human resource practitioner and trainer to her role as training coordinator at WorkLogic HR Legal Solutions, which allows her to provide clients with advice and training based upon her real-world experiences. Robin's area of expertise is in training, and she creates and delivers workshops on topics such as harassment, communication, team building, supervisory skills, and the Myers-Briggs type indicator. And word has it, she is quite the interesting character. I guess we'll see for ourselves, won't we?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Cool beans. Well, let's hear what she has to say right after after this. You are listening to Tribe Pod, a podcast series of interviews of interest to the HR community. It is hosted by Courtney Lane, produced by Jim Stroud, sponsored by Proactive Talent, and enjoyed by you. Today's episode begins right after this.
On-demand recruiting is an hourly service that we offer where our recruiters work as an extension of your business, helping to fill your positions by finding top talent.
So on-demand recruiting is there to address issues in hiring when a company is experiencing a lot of growth, when they're having some seasonality changes where they may temporarily need to expand their recruiting team. You maybe have a new line of business or a space where you're expanding your business and you need to bring in specialty expertise to help fill those niche roles that your internal team may not yet be ramped up on.
Proactive Talent's on-demand recruiting solution is quite different from a lot of the other models that you're going to see in the workplace. Whereas you're going to pay a contingency recruiting firm, typically on average around 20%, sometimes up to 30% of the first year salary of the person that you hire. And in that same period of time, you'll spend less than a quarter of that with Proactive Talent's managed on-demand.
For more information on Proactive Talent, visit them online at proactivetalent.com or click the link in the podcast description.
Well, hello, everyone. Today, I'm joined by Robin Padgy, who brings years of experience as a human resource practitioner and trainer with Venture HR. Robin's expertise is in training. She creates, delivers workshops on topics everything from harassment, communication, team building, supervisory skills, and the list goes on. Welcome, Robin. We're excited to have you here today.
Thank you. My pleasure.
So I guess just to start things off, Robin, tell the listeners a little bit about who you are, what Venture HR is, and we'll take it from there.
Great. Venture HR is a human resources outsourcing company, and every type of human resources function, payroll, benefits, workers' comp, employee relations, everything, Venture is able to handle, and especially because it has a lot of division partners. I actually work for one of the division partners called WorkLogic HR, which is in Bakersfield, California. And so what I do primarily, as you said, is training and development, creating workshops, delivering them to clients, also coaching employees one-on-one for clients to help them develop their skills, supervisory and interpersonal skills. So just really spending my time trying to help people be as successful as they can possibly be on the job in whatever capacity they're in.
Sounds like you guys do really a whole lot of everything. And I'm sure critical for a lot of organizations out there who don't have the capacity or bandwidth to have their own sort of in-house HR to that degree. So fantastic. So in preparing for our conversation today, Robin, I was reading through some of your articles and information, and I came across the one where you're talking about PTO, and I'm going to raise my hand as a person who is horrible at taking PTO. In fact, at previous employers, I've been had to be strongly encouraged to take PTO. And some of the research that you've pulled together shows how sort of critical that is today. So just to start things off, tell me about that piece. Why does taking that time off matter so much for employees?
Well, one of the things that the pandemic really taught us, I think more so anything else, is that we really need to take care of ourselves. And I think many of us took a hit as far as our mental health is concerned by the things that are going on. And that's one of the things I accidentally did a little experiment with my own mental health. I'd been pretty good with exercising. And for whatever reason, I went for a week without exercising, and I could tell a huge difference. And I told my husband, I have got to get back into the routine because my mental health has taken a big hit during the last week. And I didn't have to tell him that. He already knew that. But that's one of the things, is that there has been, fortunately, a lot of focus on self-care, and PTO is just one of those things. And during the course of our normal lives, when we're running around, and those of us who really like to run around, I think I'm like you, Courtney, I'd like to be doing stuff and go, people have to force me to relax and things like that. But it is to get replenished, and we need that. We need to be replenished. And so all of the self-care guides that have been coming out with every magazine you read, as far as the sleep that we need to have, the eating right, the exercising, all of the basic stuff that we already know, but we need to be reminded that we need to do this for ourselves. We are not going to be any good to anyone if we don't take care of ourselves. And so that's why PTO is needed so much, or vacation for those people who separate vacation and sick leave. But you've got to take care of yourself, and making yourself go on vacation is one of those things. And people who think that, no, I'm a hard worker and I need to be in there working and to demonstrate my worth and all of that, you're doing yourself a disfavor because you are going to wear yourself out. And so we need that rest time.
So I'm wondering, when you're working with organizations, are you helping from like a company-wide initiative perspective to sort of adopt these PTO practices? Are you working with individual managers? Like, who owns driving the adoption of go take your PTO, take your U time, decompress? Who really owns that? And I imagine maybe it's a mixture of a lot of different people.
Well, I think HR needs to drive so much. And that's one of the things, again, that we found out about the pandemic is how critical HR is to an organization, because as all of the things started to happen with shelter in place, and you have to pay people when they're not working under these circumstances and all of those types of things, HR really had to come to the forefront and take the lead and know what they were doing and know how to handle it and all of that. And one of the things I think that HR for a long time has been all about compliance and timekeeping and making sure people get paid and all of that. What I see coming out of all of this is for somebody in HR, at least, to be the take care of people person, the engagement person, the making sure everybody's okay person. And I think that this would lend itself nicely to that. So if you don't have somebody who's designated to take care of people, then it goes to supervisors a lot of times to make sure. Because a lot of the HR folks that we work with are a department of one, and they can't do everything. And so you've got to have supervisors who are trained. And that's what I do for the most part, is train supervisors on how to be good supervisors, which runs a whole gamut from just how to talk to people to inspire them to perform, to how to take care of people and how to know when people need to take a leave and how to make them take a leave and all of those types of things. And so, so who's in charge of this whole thing? I think that is an organization by organization decision. But I think ultimately, again, we'll have some new roles coming out of thing that people have identified, man, we should have had a person in place who's in charge of this. And so now we will have people in place who are in charge of various things just to make sure we're functioning at our best.
Well, and I wonder if sort of the fluid nature of that, the workspace and life space, I feel like has gotten very blurred in 2020. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if that has had an impact on how we're having to approach these conversations or how you are approaching conversations with supervisors. I mean, I would imagine that's a new skill set for a lot of folks, is to understand that how to not only PTO, but guardrails around the workday. Like, so folks don't, because if my office is the only place I'm ever sitting, it's really easy for me to feel like I should constantly be working, whether I'm officially taking time off or not. Does that make sense? Like what I'm saying there?
It does, but one of the things, I think that those lines were blurred before this because of cell phones. And I love my cell phone, but cell phones have caused a lot of problems in a lot of ways. And so that was happening even beforehand, is that people would constantly be checking their work email through their cell phone. And that went on way after hours. And so the line was blurred already. But yeah, you make a good point in that if I'm at home in my office all the time, that I'm working all the time. And so that's one of the suggestions that I have seen, is that you set up your workspace in your own isolated place, so that at the end of the day, you can close the door and work is done and you go out into the rest of your world. Now that I ended up working at my dining room table for the most part. And so that's, you know, I'm not saying what I just said is suggested to do, but I don't have a problem with disengaging at the end of the day. And so for people who do, who find themselves drawn in to continuing to check and do and all of that kind of stuff, because this is my workspace, I think that that is a great idea for them. I saw an advertisement recently for Tough Shed. And so I'm not affiliated with Tough Shed. I don't get any commission off of what I'm about to say, but they were talking about, hey, if you're going to continue to work from home for a long time, why don't you get a nice little Tough Shed in the back, set it up all like a nice little office. And then in the morning, you go out to your little office and you do your work. And at the end of the day, you close that door and you go back into your house. And so I think that might be one of the things that ends up happening, is businesses who develop those light little things are going to be needed and make a killing, because we're going to be home for a long time. We already know that. And not only after the whole virus is over, but who knows what's around the corner next. And the fact that some people actually do work better from home and all of that. So the whole, we go to our office and work and then we go home after that, days, I think, are over for many, many people. And so people are going to be finding new and better ways to create that little office space so that you can have a distinction and it's not so blurred.
Have you seen some companies that are already doing it right, that have found a way to create PTO policies or even enforce, but encourage their employees to use PTO in a way that's already showing to be really successful and is getting people to actually take time off?
Well, I think one of the best ways is that you put a cap on the accrual. And so that's one of the things that happens when you get that email and it says you have 400 hours of PTO available to you and you're not going to accrue anymore until you take some hours. And so that is one of the best ways to make people take it, because then they go, oh no, I'm losing time because they're not accruing any more time, and they're not really losing, nothing's being taken away from them, but it feels that way. And people hate that. They hate something being taken away that is supposed to be theirs. And so I think that that's a really great way to force people to do it. And so that's one of the things. You just have to make people do things sometimes. And if you don't, then people will not do what's in their best interest. And so that's a great way of doing it.
So I'm curious on the flip side, and full transparency, my employer is one of these, as is my husband's employer, that has unlimited PTO. And it sounds great on paper. Don't get me wrong. It sounds great. Unlimited. But I probably take even less PTO now than I did back in the times when I had, here's 10 days, do with it what you can. Is that true across the board? Are you seeing that, where that unlimited PTO?
No.
Okay.
No. Yeah. And once again, I'm in California. And so, and I work with mostly smaller businesses. And so one of the things that a law went into effect in California last year, I think, who knows, time is so blurred anymore, recently went into effect that employers in California have to provide 3 paid sick days to employees. Okay, so you're talking unlimited PTO, take off as much time as you want to. No, here employers were forced to give their employees 3 paid sick days. Now, a lot of employers already had sick days and PTO and all of that, but there were enough employers that were not providing people with paid days off when they were sick that they had to create a law in order to make it happen. So I think employers like yours are few and far between. And I'd never considered that as far as how offering unlimited PTO could inspire people to not take PTO at all. So that's pretty tricky. That's a little reverse psychology going on there, that kudos to whoever came up with that one. So I've not seen that problem whatsoever. I think you're unique in that, and you'll need to do your own study and get it published. So there you go.
Yeah. There we go. My to-do list for 2021.
There you go.
So I saw something the other day. I wish I could remember what it was. If anyone listening remembers what I am referring to, please tell me and I will give it due credit on the social channels. But I saw either an article or a tweet, somebody speaking about how we need to normalize the fact that employees shouldn't have to give a reason for PTO. And I'm curious if you've ever thought about that, because for instance, when I'm taking time off, I feel like I have to tell my employer why I'm taking time off. I'm taking time off to go on vacation. I'm taking time off for a doctor's appointment. Do you have an opinion on that? Whether when people are taking time off, do you think the lack of having to give a reason might free people up to feel like they can really just take a me day? Like, I don't have really a specific reason. I just feel like I need to take some time off, and that's okay. I wonder what you think about that.
I think things have loosened up about that. I don't give a reason. I'm taking this time off. Okay. I didn't even think about telling my employer what I'm going to be doing. So perhaps you're a better employee than I am. I don't know. But yeah, I never felt compelled. And when I was HR manager of a law firm, and somebody would go into an explanation of why they needed time off, and I'd go, hey, it's yours. Take it. You don't need to tell me. I didn't need the details. And part of that is because I'm not a detailed person, so I don't need the details. The big picture is you need to take time off. Go. But one of the things that you said reminded me of something else. And you didn't say the day, you didn't say the term mental health day, but whatever you said triggered that in my head. And I have changed my mind about mental health days. Probably a decade or more ago, I was in a room with a whole bunch of other HR people, and it was a classroom. And the instructor said, how many of you think that people should be able to take a mental health day off? And there were probably 35 people in the class. 33 of them all raised their hands. I was one of the two who did not raise her hand, along with some other person who was probably my age. And I full disclosure, my birthday was yesterday. I'm 58. And so
happy birthday.
Thank you. See, that's why I told you, because I need more happy birthdays. But no, I told you that to let you know about how old I am. And I'm at the very end of the baby boomer generation. And I'm very much into different generations and how they function and how to connect them and all of that kind of stuff. But one of the things that I know is that I was taught, you go to work. When you're sick, you go to work. You've got to be just about dead and dying to not go to work. And I don't agree with that practice. And so a decade ago or whatever it was, a mental health day, no, you go to work. Now, shortly thereafter, there was a situation up in the Bay Area. Again, I'm in California, so in the Bay Area. And I don't know the exact details, but a worker someplace was saying, I need some time off, I'm stressed. And the manager kept saying, no, 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 no. And then the worker went in with a gun and started shooting people. And instantly, my idea of a mental health day changed. Yes, if you're stressed and you need the day off, take the day off. And so one of the things I think we need to do is we need to understand how important our mental health is as well as our physical health. And if you're mentally in a place where you should not be at work or don't want to be at work, don't be at work. If you have PTO, that is a valid reason for taking the day off. And do you need to tell me you need a mental health day? No, don't tell me. Just you get the days, you do with them what you want to, you take it and you do with it whatever you need to do with it. So as I said earlier, I did this accidental experiment about my mental health, and I understood how important it is to get away from my dining room table where I'm working and take the dogs for a half hour walk. And I will feel much better when I come back to the dining room table and resume my work on my computer. And so I think that's something we really need to push going forward. Your mental health is just as important or more important than your physical health, and you take PTO for that as well.
Yeah, I think that's really important, especially today when we're in a space where you know, we're sort of stuck with our own thoughts so much of the time because we're sitting in a home and we're not out and about as much. So I'm curious if we've talked a lot about PTO, but I know that you train on a broad range of subjects and topics outside of that. And I'm curious if you have a favorite training that you like to give. Is there an area that you just get real jazzed about?
Absolutely. Communication for the most part. So I have a couple of degrees in communication and I got a master's in it so that I could teach communication classes at the college level for the rest of my career. So that was the plan. And I started doing that and then life led me in a different direction. And I started training for a college district. And then I was employed by one of my clients and I happened to be housed in human resources. And so then that's how I got into human resources. But I still teach communication. Every single training I do, regardless of whether it's harassment prevention, performance management, conflict resolution, it doesn't matter what I'm teaching. It is all communication. So I applaud my 22-year-old self for choosing that major and continuing on because it served me well. Well, everything we do is through communication, whether verbal or written. Everything we do communicates something, whether we're even there or we're not there. Our absence communicates things. And so communication is the end all be all of everything to me. Now, one of the things that I really love to do is then to talk about our communication styles and the fact that our communication style is impacted by our personality style. So I love to use the Myers-Briggs type indicator and also the DISC personality profile to talk about how people tend to communicate differently based upon their personality. And then I bring in different generations about it and how different generations tend to communicate differently and different cultures and on and on and on. And everything that we are impacts our communication style. And we communicate in order to get a desired response from our audience. Every time we're saying something, we want a specific response back. And we're effective communicators when we are able to use our communication to get those responses. And when we're effective communicators, our life is better. And so that's what I spend the majority of my time teaching over and over and over again. And even though I teach it over and over, I still learn stuff all the time about it. And hopefully I'm improving my communication all the time so that I get those results that I want. So that's my fave. Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder when you're going through these exercises during your trainings, do you see a difference in your audience in regards to that generational piece, or maybe how long somebody has been in a supervisory type of role? Is it easier for them to absorb some of what you're teaching them and pick up those habits if they're a brand new leader or a younger, you know, person to the workforce?
There are advantages and disadvantages to both, just like everything else. One of the things, when people are young, their personality styles are usually not set yet. I mean, that's one of the things is our frontal lobe of our brain, according to things that I have read, is not fully formed until we are in our mid-20s. And so that's when I do Myers-Briggs with people who are in college or even high school. They don't know, because they're not fully formed yet. And so it's a little trickier with them because they don't have the experience of making all of the mistakes that they can learn from and all of that kind of stuff. So they are easier to mold that way into good supervisors, but that whole piece is a little bit tougher with them. So people who have been around the block a few times and they've made the mistakes and they can reflect back on what they did wrong and what they should have done and all of that kind of stuff, they are the ones a lot of times who are able to really understand the differences in personality styles because they've seen it. They've experienced it more. So, but then sometimes they're a little bit more difficult to mold in and try to change them into what they need to be in order to be successful. So, good and bad for both.
Yeah. I wonder, I mean, so the majority of our audience are HR leaders or specifically more in the, you know, talent acquisition space and recruiting space. And I'm wondering, do you see a difference in sort of the tools or the communication capabilities that somebody, say, that's sitting at a recruiter's desk would have versus somebody that's sitting at maybe the HR business partner or more compliance type of role? Or are there similar sort of key pieces of the communication that need to be there regardless of what seat you're sitting in?
Well, I think definitely different aspects of HR require different types of people in order to be successful. I could not do payroll. You don't want me to do payroll. I'm not good at details. I'm not good at numbers or math or anything like that. And so for somebody whose main function is to do payroll, benefits, workers' comp, well, maybe not workers' comp, but those types of things where they're dealing with a lot of data, I think that their verbal communication skills don't need to be as good as someone who is a trainer or employee relations or a mediator or people like that. So yes, I think the job task and responsibilities very much draw upon different capabilities in the HR function.
Yeah. So my last question before we start wrapping up would be, I also, as I was reading through some of your stuff, saw some comments around emotional intelligence. And, you know, one of my very early on leaders who had a huge influence and impact on me, you know, she was the first person to really talk to me about emotional intelligence and how it makes such a difference in one's ability to sort of navigate through the space of work. And so just wanted to, if you don't mind, just sort of speak a little bit to it, to where you see that, like, emotional intelligence having its biggest impact in the way that we work together.
Well, the training that I received on emotional intelligence looks at all these different facets of it. So basically, it's being able to understand your emotions, why you feel what you feel, how to manage your emotions when you are interacting with others, especially in really emotional situations, how to pick up on what other people are feeling, how to navigate, again, when they're very emotional. It requires empathy. It requires good interpersonal skills, just a variety of things. And what I have learned is that usually if we're really good at certain things, we're going to be really bad at other things. And emotional intelligence is exactly that. So one of the aspects of emotional intelligence that I learned was independence. Okay. And so one of the things that I was reading recently about the good at-home worker, the good at-home worker needs to be somebody who's independent. So that's great because I score up the charts in independence, too much so. And that was one of the problems in working with other people. The fact that I'm really good at independence worked against me, because if you're really good at independence, chances are you're not a good team player. But then you need to be a good team player in order to be emotionally intelligent. And so that's what I mean by if you're really good at something, then chances are you're really bad at something else. And emotional intelligence is trying to get you to be equally good at both things for the most part. And so it takes work, and it takes very purposeful, thoughtful work. And so it is being able to identify, okay, these are the things that I am not good at, and how can I grow those things? So again, if you're really high on independence, you're very good at it, chances are you're not very empathetic, okay? And so that's one of the things I really had to work on is empathy and learning how to be more empathetic. And that's a huge component of emotional intelligence. So, what I'm trying to say out of all of this is that everybody has things they need to work on in order to be more emotionally intelligent. And when you are emotionally intelligent, it means you understand how to work with people. And everything we do is working with people. And so you just, the more emotionally intelligent you get, the easier your life is, because and people won't frustrate you as much, and you won't frustrate them as much, and you won't have many conflicts as you did, and you won't all of that kind of stuff. So when you begin to understand all of that stuff, you just see things through a different lens that helps you navigate the world better. And when you're able to do that, life is better. It's just that simple.
Yeah. Do you have any favorite resources that if somebody wants to dig in and learn more about emotional intelligence, that you would say this is where you should go and look if you want to do a little bit of internal digging?
Yeah, well, there are so many books available. I mean, the big book on emotional intelligence was written by Daniel Goleman, G-O-L-E-M-A-N, and that came out in 1995. So it's been around for a while. And it really, I mean, when that book came out, it was on the bestseller list for about a year. In the mid-90s, and emotional intelligence was a big deal. And then it kind of went away a little bit. And now it's coming to the forefront again, because especially in working with people who are working remotely, managers, HR, all these leaders, employers, whoever, really have to have emotional intelligence to be able to pick up on what's going on with people, because they don't see them. And so certainly going to Daniel Goleman's book, but again, lots of resources that are available. There's a wonderful training organization in Virginia that I went to receive my emotional intelligence certification. And it is called OKA. In case anybody's on the East Coast and they're able to take advantage of that. And they've got lots of goodies on their website that are available. I know that. And so, I mean, anybody would just need to Google emotional intelligence and a whole bunch of resources will pop up for them, I'm willing to bet. And they can do a little online assessment and get a little report and do all sorts of fun stuff in order to try to gauge the work that they need to do in order to get where they want to be.
Well, so we're here in our last few minutes, and I'm just curious, is there anything that we didn't touch on today, or anything that maybe we did touch on that you would just want to highlight as we sort of wrap up our conversation together?
Well, again, I would say that HR is vital. And if somebody does not have somebody on staff, they should have somebody on call. And especially New Year always brings new laws. I don't know about the rest of the country, but in California, you can count on it. And in order to be successful so that people's business can be successful, they've really got to have somebody available who can navigate all of those things. I'm doing an investigation right now for a new client, and he told me I've been in business 20 years and I've never had any problems, and all of a sudden I've got this huge problem and I don't know what to do with it and all of that kind of stuff. And he is finding out the hard way how important it is. So I think being proactive and making sure that you've got somebody at the ready who knows what they're doing is crucial so that businesses can be successful when we all get to get back to work.
Yeah, agreed, agreed. Well, thank you, Robin. And if anybody is interested in getting in touch with you or getting in touch with Venture HR, what's the best way for them to do that?
Oh, you can email me directly at rpadgy@worklogichr.com, or just Google me, Robin Padgy, and you'll be able to get in touch with me. It'll show you where I am, and it'll show you where I live. It'll show you how much my home is worth. That's the unfortunate thing about the internet. All sorts of information.
Wonderful. Well, thank you again for joining us today, Robin. It's been a pleasure having you on. And thank you to all of our listeners who joined us. Have a great one.
My pleasure. Thank you, Courtney.
Oh, that was great. I really enjoyed getting to chat with Robin around all things PTO. And
Yes. That, not to interrupt, because I see the excitement in your face, but we have a little excitement over here. It's indicative of all things 2020. Got a little bit of a fire alarm going on over here. So I'm going to have to dash away before I burn up, because I want to see 2021. So
dumpster fire.
This is indicative of the year. Dear listeners, if you also have interesting 2020 stories to share with us, please send us an email at tribepod, that's TRIBEPOD, at proactivetalent.com. Hopefully you got that down really quickly, because I have to go. Bye-bye, all.
Be safe.